And that takes us now into two sermons, and we know that there's two sermons here because you see over in chapter 6, verse 1, the expression, "The word of the Lord came to me," that's sermon 1. And then chapter 7, verse 1, "The word of the Lord came to me," that's sermon 2. So the first sermon, he's condemning the nation of Israel because of its idolatry, which is a fundamental violation of God's covenant. And in chapter 7, he says the judgment is imminent. 586 is going to happen. It could happen at any moment. Nothing can avert it at this point. And then you go into chapters 8 through 11, and we have one vision. Part 1 is in chapter 8. Part 2 is in chapter 9. Part 3 is in chapter 10. Part 4 is in chapter 11. So every chapter contains a different part of this vision. And in chapter 8, he is in Babylon and he's given a vision by God of what is happening 350 miles to the west in the temple. And in this vision, he looks into the temple and he sees idolatrous, well, he sees the priests worshiping idols. He sees idolatrous paintings all over the temple walls. He sees the priests worshiping the sun. Now, that's not the S-O-N, sun. That's the S-U-N, sun. They're worshiping the creature instead of the creator. And their backs are turned towards God. And isn't it interesting that when you become an idolater, you turn your back towards the Lord? Because Jesus says you can't serve what? Two masters. And in the temple itself, it's in chapter 8, verses 14 and 15. What does he see in that temple? He sees Tammuz. Now, do you remember our discussion or description of Tammuz? Tammuz is, and he also sees the, and Jeremiah sees it, Ezekiel sees it later on in chapter 44, the queen of heaven and Tammuz. That's the mother-child cult started by Nimrod at the Tower of Babel that went into the land of Israel. Now, if you remember what we said, what was it last night, that the nation of Israel was special because she was started independently of the mother-child cult. And here the nation become just like the mother-child cult that she was started to be different from. And this is why God is irate with the nation. And, you know, this is why judgment cannot be averted. 586 is inevitable, never mind what the priests are saying and the exiles are saying. 586 simply cannot be averted. So that is the temple vision. And in chapter 9, he sees the marking and slaying. The righteous are marked with a protective mark. The unrighteous are left unmarked. And he sees those without the mark being killed. It's pretty similar to the 144,000 Jewish evangelists. How at the beginning of the tribulation period, a protective mark is placed on them by God where they can't be harmed. And so the righteous are protected when Nebuchadnezzar comes, but the unrighteous will not be protected. In chapter 10, he sees the initial departure of God's glory to the east gate. And then finally, in chapter 11, he sees the permanent departure of the Shekinah glory of God. The Shekinah glory of God, which entered the temple that Solomon built, now leaves the temple just prior to its destruction at the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. He sees in the temple in chapter 11, 25 priests practicing violence, saying that judgment will never come. So the religious leaders were completely misleading the people. They were saying the opposite of what God was about to do. And, you know, if the priests can get to this level of sin and depravity, the nation doesn't have a lot of hope. You can kind of determine the rise or fall of nations based on the quality of its religious leaders. The religious leaders are supposed to be leading the people spiritually. And when the religious leaders become enmeshed in sin and idolatry, it's like the blind leading the blind. And the nation is about to walk over a cliff. Then you come to chapters 12 through 19, which is a very long section. And the best way I can explain chapters 12 through 19 is Ezekiel is shattering false confidences. The nation has put their faith in a false confidence of some kind. There are 9 false confidences mentioned. And Ezekiel tears down each false confidence. So the first false confidence the nation trusted in, according to chapter 12, verses 1 through 20, is the Jerusalem remnant. I said, well, everything's going to be okay. The Jews are still living in Jerusalem. And so Ezekiel is told by God to bore a hole in his house and to start taking his luggage and his furniture and things out, you know, pushing it outside that hole in this wall. And it's a symbol of what is about to happen to the nation of Israel, that they're leaving and they're not coming back until the 70-year deportation is over. And at this point, Ezekiel is told to tremble and shudder, which is a pantomime, if you will, of the fear that's going to grip the Jerusalemites when Nebuchadnezzar comes in 586. The second false optimism that they were trusting in is false parables, chapter 12, verses 21 through 28. And the parable went like this. Days go by and prophecies come to nothing. All of these prophecies about the destruction of Jerusalem are never going to happen, is what they were saying. They were trusting in this false parable. And God here says, I'm about to prove that parable wrong. Judgment is near. The third false confidence that they were trusting in is false prophets and prophetesses, chapter 13. The prophets and prophetesses were not announcing the coming judgment of God. They were saying peace and safety. And Ezekiel says what these prophets and prophetesses are doing is whitewashing. And having lived in the Dallas area, I know exactly what whitewashing is. You have a lot of foundational problems under homes. The foundation shifts and you wake up in the morning and there's a crack right through your living room wall or whatever. And the temptation is, well, you know, I don't really want to pay the money to get the foundation fixed. I'll just slap a coat of paint over it and no one will know the difference. So what are you doing? You're masking the symptom of the problem without ever dealing with the root of the problem. See, that's what these false prophets and prophetesses were doing in chapter 13. The fourth false confidence they were trusting in was false idols. And that's in chapter 14, verses 1 through 11. And the elders came to inquire of Ezekiel. And God showed Ezekiel what was happening in the hearts of these elders, that their hearts were filled with idols and idolatry. The fifth false confidence they were trusting in was righteous intercessors, chapter 14, verses 12 through 23. Hey, there's people praying for us. Nothing bad can happen. And this is where God says, it wouldn't matter if Noah himself was praying for you, or Job, or Daniel. Now, Noah and Job are ancient characters, but it's interesting, Daniel is a contemporary of Ezekiel. So Ezekiel had an awareness of Daniel in Babylon. His reputation preceded him. And he says, even if these three were praying for you, it wouldn't make any difference. 586 can't be averted. The sixth thing they were trusting in was their position as God's vine, chapter 15. Hey, we're God's special vine. Nothing bad can happen to us. And here Ezekiel explains that the wood on a vine is worth less than the bark on a tree. And it's even going to be worth even less than that when God takes this wood and burns it. It's not going to be good for anything.